and welcome to pod 38 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, which you can watch on YouTube, eagles.cpfc.co.uk, all the social media channels, and the official Palace app, which you can also listen to this podcast on if you're bored of your usual podcast provider. So what is on pod number 38? Well, obviously, it's going to finish with Roy Hodgson's press conference. Before that, we've got Statman over at Selhurst Park. A couple of England cricketers chat to me. And Josh Townsend talks to Premier League Productions. But before all that, one of my favourite comedians. He's a comedian, he's an actor, he's an associate director of Crystal Palace, and he's a patron of the Palace for Life Foundation. And it was with Palace for Life that we were doing the marathon march last week. He did the first couple of hours because he had to dash off to a gig in Plymouth. I think we talk about it in this interview. And I walked with him for a bit and had a lovely little chat. Here it is.
Eddie, how are you doing this morning?
I am fine. I know the rain's going to come, but unfortunately, I'm only doing 2 hours. I was, you know, it's a marathon. It's a walking marathon. It's like a joy for me. Because this is something, if anyone does do marathons, runs marathons, if you do get knackered, just start walking a bit and you can walk things out. You can even walk out injuries.
Really?
Yeah. I know there's a running legend called Bruce Toller who got the world record for running across America. Unfortunately, he's passed away now, but he strapped on a boot very tight. He strained, pulled a muscle in his foot. In his leg, calf, and he just put a boot on, strapped it tight, and he walked every day to keep his distance going. So you can actually walk out injuries, which is an amazing thing. But anyway, it's great to be on this. You know, it's helping kids in South London. Mental health is obviously the thing that we're looking at, well, we're really trying to focus on this year. And I'm so pleased that I'm able to get here. I didn't come from a gig in Oxford last night and a gig in Plymouth tonight. So,
And you're going from Plymouth to Newcastle tonight.
We'll actually get in the bus after the gig and they'll drive up through the night. That's the modern touring method.
So what show is that?
It's called Wunderbar.
Okay.
Wunderbar, that'll be at the London Palladium at the end of this month and for 4 days and beginning of November. But, I've toured it all around the world.
What languages are you doing shows in at the moment?
So, Auf Deutsch. Alice Auf Deutsch. So I did that. It was actually developed in Francais and in German. So I went to... I normally workshop the things and I muck about and I'll just work, you know, play with the audience. And I normally do that in English. But I did this one in French first for 2 months and then about a month in Germany, literally just mucking about. And sometimes you don't have the words, you don't have the vocabulary, and you have to ask the audience. So that's kind of bonkers, but I like pushing it. I like reaching out and making connections around the world. You know, football is a great connector. Think of it. I think football can save the world. Here's my theory. I have a lot of theories.
Let's go.
I say this to American people because football soccer is lower on their priority list, but it's a great human game, because if you're tall, you can be good at football. If you're small, you can be good at football. If you're wide, you can be good at football. If you're thin, you can be good at football. We've seen examples of this. It's completely open to anyone. And in Europe particularly, we used to say, oh, women can't play. And now we know women can play amazing football. And I played on a mixed team in LA when I was playing one. And the woman on, I can't remember her name, I think it was like Stella, and she had red hair. And she was just the best striker we had going. So just get it to Stella, just kick it to Stella. And when she got it, she'd wang it in the back of the net. I thought, this is, you know, and that's beautiful to see that. So I think it spreads the respect around. And it's particularly in the international games that you think, well, America's got so much money and in Britain we've got, you know, we're a big country or whatever, or financially well off. But we can get beaten. Did we get beaten last night?
Yeah, we did.
The Czech Republic beat.
And we beat them 5-0 only like a couple of months ago.
I know. So, and I like that about football. I like that about the Premiership this season.
Yeah.
Is that it's not exactly who you think. Okay, Man City. Who just beat Man City? Was it Wolves?
Norwich beat them, didn't they? And Wolves beat them as well.
Yeah. So this is good. We need that. Because I remember in my day, it used to be quite a fluid first division way back in the day before we became the Premiership. And that is better for every major city around the UK in the Premiership, being able to say, hey, our guys are doing good. You know, we're eighth in the table at the moment. And internationally, that's great. I think football is the one that can save the world because it spreads the respect around.
Do you get to have much football chat when you're travelling around the world?
Not really. My problem with football is I stopped playing team games when I was 12, right? Yeah. I went to a boarding school, and I'm going to say this every time I'm on a camera. There's certain boarding schools around Britain that do not play, or they play field hockey instead of football. That is insane. I think we invented the game. We pretty much invented the more modern game. And so, yes, field hockey has its place, but surely football, cricket there, rugby and football, those should be the main ones, and then whatever. So, but I stopped at 12, and I lived and died for it, and I became a Palace fan at 1969, and if we won, it was great, and if we lost, it was hellish. And I'm still in that kind of vein. So I find it very painful in football. You know, I get the reports, because I'm usually touring or filming somewhere, and when the Palace report's coming through on texts, I got this app where every time there's a goal scored, it goes, like a sound of a goal being scored. And I have to look and go, is that for us or is that for them? That's for us. You know, I'm still living and dying by the goals that are going in. But yes, I like the position we're in. We were up at fourth, weren't we? Just a couple.
Sixth now.
We're sixth now. It's not eighth. We're sixth. So, and we were fourth just before. But still, I think we're a little bit lucky to be here. But we've had a rough beginning of seasons for a number of years. So this is a better beginning of season than we've had for a long time.
And finally, just because I've put some guys here today doing their first ever walk like this, what's the best way of getting into doing regular exercise, like going for a walk?
Okay, well, this is what I tell. When I ran my 27 marathons in 27 days in South Africa, I'm just saying that to just show that I have credentials.
And the last day was two.
The last day was a double marathon because day five I couldn't run my marathon. I had a guy called Tim Cruise-Drew, and he was an Olympic level sports trainer, sports therapist, and he was giving me advice on what to do and just how to look after your body, how to mentally approach it. It's a mental thing, but he told me once you've done the big marathons, you don't need to do them all the time. Hang on. He says, what Tim said was that do HIIT training, high intensity interval training. It's the sprint recovery. It's what football players do. Rugby players do it as well. Football players are probably the best examples of that because they're all amazingly fit. It's sprint recovery. If you do half an hour of that before breakfast, before eating, fasted it's called. So as if you haven't been eating, you will kickstart your metabolism. That's all you need to do, 20 minutes to half an hour every day that you can before breakfast. And that's what I do now. And you can keep match fit for life. Because match fit for life, surely that is the way to do it. All the wild animals do it. We were wild, we became civilized and slightly more tamer, and we stopped doing this. We don't fight for our food, we don't hunt for our food. But if you want to say match fit for life, you can do this on a bicycle, you can do it on a treadmill, you can do it outside running, you can do it swimming. But it's sprint recovery. You've got to get out of breath. Getting out of breath like we did as kids, that is one of the key things of staying fit. So look it up, HIIT, HIIT training.
Thank you very much. Perfect.
All righty.
Eddie Izzard there. And now for something completely different. A man who scored that incredible goal against Man City last season. It's been all over the internet ever since. Here is Mr. Andros Townsend talking to Premier League Productions.
So Andros, you've had a really good start to the season. Sixth in the Premier League, level on points with Chelsea and Leicester, and just two behind City. What have you made as a player to Crystal Palace's start?
Yeah, it's been a very good start, but it's important not to get carried away. League positions at this stage doesn't really count for anything. Until everyone's played each other once, then you can start looking at the table and seeing where you're at. But at the minute, we've been on a good run. We've picked up some points, which has been unexpected of us. We had a good win in the last game away at West Ham, but now comes the tough games. And it doesn't come much tougher than Saturday against City. So we're fully focused for that, and hopefully we can pull off another few shots in the next few games.
You started the season with that draw against Everton, then you lost to Sheffield United. How do you, as a group of players, like recover from that to go on to beat Manchester United and obviously go on this run now where you are unbeaten in three games?
It was difficult. It was a difficult start. When you prepare for the whole of pre-season, when you think, yeah, we're looking good, we've got a good team, we're going to go places this season. And then to start with 1 point from two games, it's not ideal. You start questioning yourself as a team. But since then, the manager's made a few changes. The players that have come in have done incredibly well. We've managed to go on a run. I think we've only lost once since then. So, yeah, we've picked up and we've started to play in a way we know we can. We've started to pick up points and hopefully we can keep that going.
I saw Wilfred Zaha at the Best of Africa Awards and he said that there's a really good mood in the camp at the moment. There seems to be consistency in your performances as well as the results at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. If you're performing consistently well, sooner or later you start picking up the results you deserve. I think that's what we've done. Hopefully we can continue that. We've been working hard on the training pitch, leaving no stone unturned. We're going to be fully prepared for the next run of games, which is going to be incredibly difficult. But hopefully, like Wolf says, we can keep that good feel-good factor going and pick up some unexpected points.
And I asked Wilfred about like what his aims are for the season. He said he wants to score 15 goals and get 10 assists. Do you think he can do that this season?
Of course, Wolf's probably one of the best players I've played with. He's capable of anything. I think last season he set himself a target of 10 goals. He managed to get that, so I wouldn't put it past him to reach his targets this year.
Another attacking player, Jordan Ayew, he's had a really good start. He scored 3 goals. Roy Hodgson said that he's kind of rejoicing in the fact that he knows he's a regular starter and he didn't have that break in the summer as well. So what have you made to his start to the season?
I think even last year, Jordan was in and out of the team, but when he did play, he did an incredible job for the team. The players really appreciated the work he did put in. Although he wasn't scoring the goals, maybe the public didn't think he was doing well, but our teammates fully appreciated him, and that's the reason we ended up making his loan permanent in the summer. And this season, he seemed to have got confidence from that, and he started the season very well, not only working hard for the team and making runs other players wouldn't, but he's now starting to score goals as well, and we're all delighted for Jordan, and hopefully he can continue that because he's a massive player for us.
And down the other end of the pitch, you're doing really well. Conceded just 8 goals once at Selhurst Park. Even as an attacking player, do you take quite a lot of pride in that?
Yeah, I think we are. We do a lot of work defensively, not only just the defenders, but our whole 11. We do a lot of shape work. And so when you come into the field on the Saturday, you know exactly where you need to be, in what phase of play. If the ball's on the opposite side, you know where you need to be, your position at all times. So I think that's well drilled and we know what we need to do, and I think that's why you're starting to see more and more good defensive displays as an 11.
And for yourself personally, you've been in and out of the starting lineup. You have scored 1 goal though already this season. Is it frustrating that you're not playing more, or are you kind of just biding your time because there is a lot of competition for places up front?
I think it's a bit of both. First two games didn't start the season that well. Rightfully lost my place in the team. And since then, the teams, I don't think they've lost a game that I've not been in the starting 11. So can't really argue too much with that. The team's doing well. Like you said, I just have to bide my time. My last two performances off the bench were I made good contributions. I scored and helped set up the winning goal against West Ham. So I feel like my confidence is back, and now it's just biding my time until such stage that the manager feels that I'm right to go back into the starting 11 and I can... hopefully I can stay there.
And obviously you've got a big game coming up this weekend, City at home. You must be going into this game full of confidence because, for example, just before the international break, you came from behind and beat West Ham.
Yeah, I think we're a confident side anyway, but to go away from home to a side like West Ham, who are doing well, to go a goal behind and to show the strength and resilience to pull it back and score in the last minute in the way we did, it gives us great confidence. The international break has been a good... buzz about is good feel factor, and now the international boys are coming back. We're starting to focus on the game on Saturday. We've played them before, we've beaten before, so yeah, we know it's going to be probably one of the toughest games of the season, but we're fully looking forward to it.
You mentioned that win at the Etihad last season. What lessons can you learn from that game going into this match?
I think it's not just about that match. I think we've gone to a lot of big sides and pulled off a lot of unexpected results. We went to Old Trafford this season and won 2-1. So it's not about lessons, it's about doing the same things we did to get those results, defend well, not be fully focused on attacking until the right moment presents itself. Don't leave yourself open. And the main thing is when you get your chances, you know you have to take them because you won't get many on the day. So you have to be clinical. And we were clinical against City last season. We were clinical away at Arsenal. We were clinical away at Man United this season. And we're going to have to be clinical again on Saturday.
You just talked about taking your chances. Obviously, you scored that stunning goal last year. It was voted a goal of the season by the Premier League. Are you expecting to be closed down a bit more quicker this time if you play?
Yeah, they probably won't give me the freedom outside the box. But yeah, no, it was a good goal to top off the perfect away day. It's a goal and a game that I'll always remember for the rest of my career. So, but that's been put to bed now. I have to focus on Saturday's game and trying to replicate it.
I mean, Norwich beat City at home, didn't they, this season? Will you be looking at that game at all and looking at where you could potentially hurt City?
Yeah, we do a lot of video prep. That will be on Thursday and Friday and Saturday. So we do a lot of video prep preparing for the games. We see how other teams have exposed them, how they've exposed other teams. So we don't get caught in the same trap that other teams have been caught in the past. And on the other side, we know what areas we can kind of exploit. Not that there'll be many with City, but we know what to expect coming in the game on Saturday and we're fully prepared.
And obviously after this game, you've got quite a tough run of fixtures coming up. Where do you envision taking points in those fixtures? Or is it a case of you're just going to be thinking game by game?
I think as footballers, you kind of take it game by game. And as you know, you go into every game believing you could win. So I'm not going to sit here and say we want X amount of points because every game we play we want 3 points. We know we're good enough to get 3 points, so yeah, I think we'll see where we are after this run of games and then take stock and see how good a start we've had to the season then. But as for how many points, it's difficult to say.
Who gets nutmegged in training
the most? I'd have to say myself. For one reason or another, I always close down with my legs open, and when you have players like Wilf, it seems every time I go to close him down, somehow he finds a way to get it through my legs. So unfortunately, that one is me.
Who puts the most effort into training and who doesn't?
Most effort, I'd probably say James McArthur. Similar to on a Saturday, he's always running everywhere, no matter what drill we're doing. He's making sure he's running more than other people. Who puts the least effort in? I'm going to cop out on this one and say the goalkeepers, because obviously they're not running around as much.
Who practices the most, and does anyone stay late to do more?
We have a group who like to stay after and do finishing. Probably myself, Max Meyer, Christian Benteke will always stay when we can after training and do extra finishing. Luka Milivojevic will stay at times to practice his free kicks, to practice his penalties. So yeah, that's four or five.
And in the gym, who does the most bench presses?
We have a leaderboard about who lifts the most altogether, and somehow James McArthur is top of that. But the strongest in the gym, I'd say, outside of that, is probably Jeffrey Schlupp.
And who poses in the mirror while doing their weights?
There's a lot of that going on. I'd probably say Scott Dann. He's always in there doing his dumbbell presses, his beach weights as we call them. Sneakily lifts his top up to have a look if it's working. So yeah, I'll have to say Scott Dann.
In your group gym sessions, who's the most encouraging and who takes the mick out of the rest of the players the most?
Who takes the mick out of the rest is definitely Wilf. No matter what you're doing, how you're doing it, he'll find a way to put you down and to make a joke about your technique or one thing or another. Yeah, so Wilf, most encouraging, probably James McArthur. If it's a serious session and you're struggling, for example, to get the reps in, he'll always encourage you and make sure you can get that last rep in.
And what's your best bit of advice to get the most out of gym sessions?
Probably to never skip a rep. I think it's easy in group sessions when there's 25 of you to maybe do 5 reps and think that the coach is not looking and you can get away with just doing the minimum. But as you know, if you want to get to the top, if you want to make the most out of yourself, you have to do exactly what's asked of you and more. So yeah, that's probably my advice.
And Josh Townsend there, and yes, Jeffrey Schlupp is very strong in the gym. His I think it's his squatting record, the amount that he can squat is ridiculous, because they've got a leaderboard in the gym which has different sections and which players top in everything. And yeah, Jeffrey Schlupp is way up there, and James McArthur I think is on the top of the board for athleticism, which is when they take all of the gym stuff into account. Okay, so that's football. Moving on to a different sport, cricket. We had England players Joe Denley and Sam Billings come down to the training ground. They joined in with first team training. They did a little bit of the rondo stuff at the start, or piggy in the middle, and then it was decided that they were good enough, so that Roy actually let them join in. He's a big cricket fan, so he let them join in with summer training. A lot of it was them. The keeper would punt it to them, they'd control it and then play it out to the wings, and the players would cross it in. It was a really good session. And then we moved next door to Kent's Academy, which is literally through the hedge at the training ground, and Roy fed some balls through the bowling machine over 80 miles an hour to Joe Denley, which was incredible to watch. The sound that it makes when it hits the bat, I've never heard anything like it. And then Joel Ward padded up and hit some balls that Sam Billings was feeding into him, and I chatted first to Joe Denley and then Sam Billings. Joe, how was it batting from Roy Hodgson's bowling machine bowling?
No, it wasn't too bad. He was quite kind, I think. We had it on a reasonable setting, so yeah, not too bad. Hopefully he enjoyed the experience and gave him, I suppose, a bit of an insight to what we have to face and deal with on a day-to-day basis.
You seem like quite a big cricket fan when you're chatting to him.
He did, yeah. I think he goes down to the Oval and follows a bit of Surrey and watches a bit of England when they're playing there as well. And he has a keen interest in the game. And I suppose as any professional sportsman, there's always a few sports that you follow. And he seems to be quite a big cricket fan, so it's good to know.
It's been a massive year for you with England. How much have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's been amazing. Really enjoyed this summer, and looking forward to what hopefully will be a busy winter as well. To play in an Ashes series, I probably didn't think I would have done that had you asked me a year or two ago. So, to be standing in the position I am now and going away to New Zealand in a couple of weeks to play T20s and more Test match cricket, I'm absolutely delighted and looking forward to what I said was hopefully a busy winter.
What was the standout moment for you?
I think being there at Headingley and seeing that unbelievable day of cricket, where Ben Stokes sort of won us that game single-handedly in what is probably one of the best Test matches and one of the best innings ever to be played. I'll never forget that day, that is for sure. Just the whole atmosphere and being involved in it and playing a small part in it was certainly a very special day.
You played football a bit earlier. What was your history? Was it Charlton you were in the academy?
Yeah, I played a little bit of Charlton age groups for a year and a half. And the old man decided that football probably wasn't the right path to go down. I was always quite small and playing a bit of catch-up. So, obviously chose cricket and he probably made the right call there.
How much of cricket is in your head when you're batting? Because the speed that ball comes, is it just years and years of your brain knowing how to read where the ball's going to come?
Yeah, I think it's why you practice, isn't it? I think it's having an understanding of what you're coming up against. We're quite lucky with facilities we have. The bowling machine, you can crank the pace up and make it swing, make it, chuck down all sorts of deliveries. And, it's important that when you're training, you have a focus on what you're coming up against. I suppose it's the same in football. You train and come up with different strategic plans to whichever team you're playing against, and it's no different in cricket. And it's about putting in the hard yards in practice, so that when you go out in the middle, it's almost instinctive, and it's not as tough as it may look sometimes.
And finally, how exciting a time is it for you to be involved in cricket? It feels like similar to that 2005 summer where the whole nation was suddenly interested. But is it important to capitalise on that now?
Yeah, what an incredible summer of cricket it's been. I think it's captured the whole nation, and just seeing the amount of attendances, not only at Kent, but being involved with England on the back of that World Cup win, and obviously a very intriguing Ashes series as well. I think if you ask any county cricket team, the attendances in 2020 cricket and first class cricket has risen, and there's more kids getting involved. So yeah, it's important to capitalise on that, that's for sure. And hopefully we can get more and more kids involved and grow the younger the generation, and cricket can hopefully prosper from it.
You've not got a club. Are you going to be a Palace fan now?
Yeah, I think I might do, actually. Obviously, being a part of it this morning, seeing some of the players. And I used to follow Arsenal a little bit, but sort of my love for them sort of deteriorated a bit since the Invincibles. So, yeah, I might follow Palace from now on.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Tam, first of all, just a reaction on Joel Ward's batting.
No, once he got the hang of it, and I just told him to smack it, and yeah, couldn't miss it after he'd done that. So no, it was great to see him in the nets. And again, it's just an appreciation, like we did with the football earlier, that he gets to see what we're like or what we have to go up against when we're batting.
So for you, with Kent, how have Kent done recently?
So we've had a brilliant year in terms of back in the top division, so Division 1, first time in near enough 10 years. So as a squad, it was fantastic to see. We've got three internationals now in the squad, which is great for the club, and all homegrown talent as well who have come through the academy. So that's what, as a club, what we want to try and do is produce England cricketers, and like I said, having three in a squad is a great achievement.
For those fans in Kent that maybe haven't been to a cricket game before, what would you advise? How would they start off getting into it?
Well, the great thing is I think people associate cricket with just being days long and too long and boring. Well, there's so many different formats of the game. So you've got the longer format of the game, which we play here at Beckenham, as well as the T20, which is about 3 hours long, split into two halves, just like a football game. And yeah, far more fast-paced. And for the kind of new fan, that's probably more to get you into initially. You've got the 50-over game, which is one whole day. So there's different kind of things, whatever you decide to kind of look at. But it's a great game. If anyone saw the World Cup final, obviously, this year with England and then the Ashes as well, it really is a game for everyone, and something we'd always welcome Palace fans here to Beckenham. That's a great thing about Kent as a county as well. We've got the Beckenham ground here, which borders onto your training ground, and then we've got Tunbridge Wells, which play a couple of games every year, and then also Canterbury's our home ground. So we kind of cover all parts of what's a big county. So yeah, if anyone's close to any of those grounds, definitely come and have a look.
Unfortunately, you were injured in the summer, so you missed all that drama. How did you keep in touch with it all?
Yeah, I did quite a lot of Sky work actually during the World Cup, so managed to support the boys throughout that World Cup campaign, kind of working and getting through the injury and just rehabbing through. As your players know, that injuries are tough and part of sport, unfortunately. So a lot of my summer was made up of just rehabbing away, and managed to play some cricket at the back end of the year.
How proud of you were you watching your teammate bat in the Ashes?
Yeah, unbelievably proud. I think he probably hasn't got the credit that he deserves in terms of going all over the place in the order, and did it under tough circumstances against the best bowling attack in the world. So, as I alluded to earlier, in terms of international cricketers playing at Kent, I mean, he's flying the flag, the Kent flag, as well as anyone, and it's just great to see. And what all of us guys want to kind of emulate. He's a senior player in our dressing room, and certainly for the younger guys, he's a great kind of role model for them as well. So, absolute chuffed for him.
You're both about to head off for the winter. You've got a new coach at England. How much do you see things changing?
Yeah, not too much. He's been a bowling coach for a couple of years now, and a great human being in Chris Silverwood. So he knows a lot of us actually through the county circuit. So was coach at Essex, and then now has obviously stepped up into that role. And I've got no doubt he'll be a success. I'd like to think we've got a good bunch of players that are pretty easy to manage as well. So, he'll relish that role, definitely.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks for that.
Cheers, mate.
Cricket, a gentleman's sport. And we move from a gentleman's sport to a man who is not a gentleman in the slightest, but he is inside my house.
Statman. Statman.
Yes, that's right. It's a home tie for me. I'm in my post-match interview room with Statman. What do you think of my little corner?
I feel like it's a spider that's caught himself a fly here. I'm very much in your web. This is you, isn't it? This is Grierson on a match day. I'll explain what we're looking at. We're looking at the small media backdrop board, which Chris will do his interview with the manager and Crystal Palace player after the game. And he just looks so at home sat here, don't you? This is...
Well, I've spent many an hour sat in here waiting. I don't anymore. I don't sit in here anymore. I wait in the tunnel now. I just hover. I leave my cameraman in here on his own. And I hover in the tunnel, unless it's a defeat.
This is just another fine example of Grierson rising through the ranks, isn't it? Do you not know who I am? You think I will wait for Hodgson? No. Hodgson will come to me.
I'll wait in the tunnel and chat to people first. This is where I had a lovely moment with Alan Pardew once, after a defeat. It was after the one against Liverpool, where I think it was that one. It's the one when Benteke went down for a penalty for Liverpool. Delaney fouled him.
Yeah.
There wasn't much contact. It was quite debatable. They scored. And Pardew was not happy. And there was a famous one. It made it online. It went viral. Him with Jeff Shreves was really off with him. I had to interview him after that. And he came in here. And he walked in and he punched the wall on the way through, and then he punched the ad board behind me, and he turned around and said, "Careful what you ask me." I was like, Alan, thoughts on the game?
What will you be having for dinner, Alan? Well, I really, really want to watch this interview now. Were they the most delicate questions?
I can't. I'll look it up. Yeah, I'll get it for you.
I'd like to see.
Yeah, it must have been delicate. A bit shaky.
And thus kicked off rather a tumultuous relationship between Grierson. Oh,
this was, he was already comfortable with me at this point.
Yeah,
this was like second season.
Was this before or after he told you to do your job better in announcing the team?
After.
After that?
Yeah.
Because he had a problem with that, didn't he? You weren't doing it professionally.
More professional.
Bring back Pards!
Honestly, it was great.
Not that we don't want Hodgson out, but anyway.
No, of course. No, he's the best.
No. Bring him back just purely for banter. Yeah, bring him back on the pod. Just bring him back on the pod.
Oh, that'd be good. Get rid of you. Get him in.
Yeah. All right.
So what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? You asked me now. I tell you what I've been up to. Mightily impressed with how loyal you stay to Palace. Even as neutral as you have to be, whenever I ask you the prediction and I think, banker, we're not getting a result here, somehow you've dug it out of the bag. 3-1, I think, was the call.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. What was it, 2-1?
So 2-1, yeah. But not bad.
Yeah, of course.
And I fed you this stat, but you took it and ran with it anyway, so I'll give it to you. The penalty one. We all said West Ham give away the most penalties, Palace are scoring the most, and then we had that little debate, Luke is not playing. I asked you, the one thing I like is that you work at the training ground and that you might be able to spot that. You didn't have a clue.
I had absolutely no idea
that
Patrick van Aanholt would take a penalty. Wow. Yeah, I couldn't believe it because I actually missed the whole... I was at a wedding.
This is it, another...
With no signal.
Yeah.
I didn't find out the result until 8:30 at night. This is the first time in... It must be over a decade... Yeah. That I've not known a Palace result until way after.
Here's a question. Have you ever, obviously you won't do it now, but as a kid, made it through to match of the day without knowing the score? And you're watching 5 minutes of intense highlights with everything on it?
No. Okay. No, I can't remember. I have done in the past.
You'd remember if you did it, mate. Don't try and black this. Oh, I might have done it.
I didn't know until I turned it on, got some Wi-Fi, and then I got the notifications through from the official Palace app. And then, even better, because we can now put the highlights up 2 hours after the final whistle. Sponsored by the University of Roehampton. I managed to go on and watch the highlights straight away.
What a rule. I'm pleased they're doing that. And we can pump them out much quicker than we could ever do before.
Superb, isn't it? Great for the metrics. Great for when the deal is renegotiated.
Yeah. I'm sure they want to hear about sponsorship contracts. Yeah. But no, fantastic. What a result. And I think, we move onwards now. Back-to-back wins. I'm going to roll seamlessly into my statistics off the back of that. That's all right.
Yeah. Seam me. Sew me.
So up.
Sew me up. Or unthread me.
I want to do none of those things, really, but just throw a few stats at you, if that's all right.
Yeah, okay, what you get up to...
Make sure you get me in the face.
What you get up to in your own time is of none of my concern. Let me stat you now. Great form, aren't we? So back-to-back wins, which is lovely to get. 7 points in three games as well. So we are climbing that table. Were you getting excited then when you saw the league table as well from the wedding? Because I didn't realise there were so many games to be played on Sunday. I thought, we're Champions League, brilliant, here we go. And then for once, you could say results didn't go for us on Sunday.
Yeah, but you know me. I'm ever the realist. I was straight away, I was like, oh, I'm careful with the top four thing, guys. Because there's some more games to play. Plus, we've got a very difficult October and November.
He's been there, done that all too many years before. Here's one. When would you get excited?
That season when Pardew went after Christmas, we were in the top four or top five. Yeah.
See, I wasn't at the club at that stage, but I've heard tales of a fantastic Christmas party. Everyone on top form. In my mind, Pardew's dancing on the table. They've just come back from Stoke away.
Yeah, it's true.
With the last minute winner. And literally, the club was...
It's the best Christmas party we've ever had.
Exactly.
Pardew did a speech. They played clips of Brighty on the chase. As a joke thing, everyone had an amazing time. It was, as you said, it was just after Chungy's winner against Stoke. Didn't win a league game until April.
That is us.
That's a cup run.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the best runs.
Yeah, that was exciting. Though we thought it was Europe next season.
So that's why I can see the scars on you now from getting too excited.
Oh, we had a conversation today with Seb, photographer, about. We're just
what
saying,
fantastic
if you
photos he takes, by the
very
way.
Very good.
Follow him now.
Yeah, if you got into the Europa League, what teams would you want, like, for places to visit? And I came up with, I'd want Real Betis, just like a southern Spain during winter.
Sorry, can I stop? Yeah, is this just for you for your holiday?
Just to pop over there.
Now I know the criteria. Crack on, Chris.
Seville's a great city. Okay. Real Betis. What else? It was like a random, really cold Norwegian one, like Trondheim, where it's really snowy and dark all year, just to experience that. And then a random one like St. Petersburg or Vladivostok, although they're not in the top. Somewhere miles away in Russia or St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
And possibly, or something like Lazio.
I was literally about to say Lazio. Mm. I think a little boys trip out to...
We're not getting ahead of ourselves. This is purely theoretical, but...
I mean, what we're literally doing, Chris, is picking the opponents we'd like in the Europa League as we sit in sixth place after how many games? Yeah, you could say we're not getting carried away.
I'm not getting carried away.
No,
it's just theoretical.
Yeah, it's theoretical at the moment. But no, I agree.
You'd want a Spanish, you want a Scandinavian.
Yeah, I tell you what I'd like. I'm just thinking realism. I'd I just want passionate games. I'd love a German team. Give me FC Köln or someone like that. You know, maybe give me a Wolfsburg. Throw me in, I don't know, all of those Bundesliga teams. I think the atmosphere is phenomenal.
Yeah, it'd be good. But then also you want to win them.
Ooh,
so what rubbish team would you want to play?
See, I'm part Norwegian, so I don't want to slag off Norwegian teams. But the standard of football is horrific. Rosenborg or Molde. Let's have Molde. Solskjaer's old boys.
Yeah, that'd
give
be good.
Give them a spanking.
You know that we're going to clip that up. Just you say give them a spanking.
Give them a spanking.
That's going to be used again. Anyway, should we go back to reality with your green and red highlighter there on your stats?
Enough of my spanking chat. Yeah, so great form. Good record against City. I would say we've got a good record against City. Football is subjective, but in my opinion, we have a good record.
Really, because today we found footage of us losing 11-4 to Manchester City in 1926.
How did you find footage?
It's on one of our archive drives. It's not got every goal in it, but it has got the kickoff and the ref's wearing a blazer.
That's amazing. I want more footage like that. Yeah. Maybe not. 11-4 defeat.
11-4.
That's painful for five aside.
In the FA Cup, yeah.
Ooh.
Right, moving on. Sorry, I'm digressing. Sorry, things I've thought about.
Yeah, okay. Man City record. Let's just focus on that. I don't think many teams could say this, though. You know, we've taken 4 points from our last three games against Man City.
That's good.
Not that bad at all. And one of those points, I think we all, do you remember it? New Year's Eve, last minute. One of the 20% penalties that Luka Milivojevic missed.
20%?
More than 20%. He scored 80% of his penalties. So that was one of his 20%.
He must have scored more of 80%.
No. Yeah. Look me up. Look me up and stat me.
Oh, one of the 20%. 10%. Yeah. No, that's wrong.
Yeah. No, it's not, mate.
He scored like 20 out or 21 out of 23, something like that, hasn't he?
Or maybe. Yeah, more. I mean, you put me on the spot here. Again, you know, if anyone's out there and is an actual statistician, would like to join the show, we could do with it at times like this because, you know, in TMS.
I'm trying to work
cricket,
out my maths here.
They have that geeky guy at the back and they go, oh, his name is Charlie, just look that up for us, mate.
Yeah, he hasn't, because if it was 20%, like that would mean that he'd missed 2 out of 10, but he definitely hasn't. He's missed 2 out of 23 odd.
But say he's taken 20 penalties.
Yeah, and he's missed 2.
He's missed 4.
He hasn't. He's missed 2 for Palace.
Oh, okay.
One against Man City.
See, that's the sort of one stage.
And one against Everton.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, I don't know. When he missed that.
Yeah, okay.
It was...
There's my get-out clause. Thank you very much.
You just make stuff up.
Well,
every time.
I shouldn't have thrown that stat in. But yeah, we'll chat that. Anyway.
Stop riffing. Just read what's on the paper. That's from Opta. That's correct. Anything that you think is normally wrong.
What's happened here, Chris? I've lost Dan Blundell. I've lost Dan Blundell.
And oh, did you used to have an earpiece in
Dan
and he'd be chatting to you?
Dan used to pump it. Dan was basically me. He would say everything. He would give me what I needed and he'd pack me off like with a little lunchbox, like I was going off to school and I had everything I needed. And he's no longer here and we miss you.
Yeah. R.I.P. Dan.
R.I.P. Dan.
Over at the Jockey Club.
Not really dead. Right, let's chat stats though more. Our unbeaten record, it is now equal, isn't it? We've gone 6 games unbeaten at home in the Premier League.
Woof.
So if we can avoid defeat, it would be our longest run.
And isn't it equal with the season where we got relegated?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, 93, yeah. You're absolutely right.
Thank you.
The worrying thing though with this unbeaten run is... Who was the last team to defeat us?
The last team to... Man City.
Yeah,
really?
Man City. So are they going to come and spoil our party again? We don't know. But anyway, that's on the horizon. Let's talk 2019. So this year, we're killing it. We are absolutely killing it. If the season started on the 1st of January, we'd be in what position, Chris, do you think?
I believe, from what I've read, 4th.
Exactly. So we wouldn't be talking about Rosenberg, Real Betis. We'd be talking about Bayern Munich.
I wasn't talking about Rosenberg.
I was talking about them. I said we collectively were talking about it, but I'm sorry that insults you so much.
No, actually, it actually made me think that would be a good team to play.
It would be, yeah, a bit of history behind it, yeah. Most successful in Norway.
Stefan Iversen played for both clubs.
There you go, yeah. You'd have a bit of content there.
Anyway, back to reality.
Right, back to reality. So we would be in fourth, so hey-ho, all looking good. Talking about starts, actually, funnily enough, we were just referencing it now with the fateful Christmas party with Alan Pardew dancing on the table. This is our second... best ever start in the Premier League. So our best start, as you rightfully point out, was that 2015-16 season when after 8 games, so we had a total of 14 points. At the moment, we've got 14 points after 8 games and we had 15 under Pardew in 2015-16. So pretty damn close.
Yeah. Wow, this is good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's looking all right. Let's talk our record against
Chelsea. I think this may be right, this is what someone told me, that after 13 games of this season...
Yeah.
So in 5 games' time, we would have played the top 10 already from last season's Premier League, plus the 3 promoted teams. So if we're doing well after that, then we are doing well.
That's the thing. That's exactly what Steve said in an interview recently on the Marathon March, powered by Utilita. Well done for your coverage on that. We sidetracked. But yeah, he did say on that one, didn't he? He said, ask me again in 5 games' times and we'll really know where we are. And this is it, isn't it? Key question though, are you going to be at any of those away games?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what they are. We've got,
Arsenal away?
No.
Not too far for you.
I'm
okay.
Not.
Brilliant pressure.
So we've got a chance.
We've got a chance.
Because
Arsenal away, Chelsea away. Oh, nice.
Yeah, Chelsea away doing that. Just down the road.
Just up the road. There you go. Come on, you West London unnamed team. So you've got, you've the pressure's off really. I just, when we won again against West Ham, I just thought, this is it. The boys clearly play better without you there.
Yeah. Yeah, no pressure. They're not thinking about all those tough questions. All those tough and not safe at all, not tiptoeing questions. They're going to be asked.
Exactly. pressure off. But let's quickly talk about, I've only got a few more, our record against the champions. So this is pretty damn good, this record. We've won 4 out of the last 5 seasons against the team that were champions.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's good. No,
yeah,
it's good.
It is wow. Yeah, more enthralled wow.
Wow. Gee, yeah. Louise. Yeah.
It's because you already knew that, though, didn't you? Because we put the article out earlier. But still, 4 out of 5. And the one team we didn't beat in that?
The one team we didn't beat was probably Man City.
No.
Okay. Well, who else has won the thing? Chelsea?
No, one season? No.
Who else has won the league? Leicester City.
Yeah, the one you'd think, oh, we would have had a chance against them.
Yeah, because the season after, I remember, we lost away, didn't we? And then we lost home. Drew at home. Lost,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You do now. I remember it well. Yeah.
Jeff Schlupp came on, didn't he, as a sub? Yeah, and then he went down, he was injured, rolling off the pitch, and they scored, and we all got angry.
But it's annoying because obviously they didn't have a great season afterwards, after being champions, did they? Ranieri got the sack early doors. We didn't put more.
So that should have been the season.
But anyway, 4 out of 5 isn't bad. Can we continue it? Quick one about penalties. Unrivaled now with our penalties. Since our promotion in 2013, we've won 47 penalties. Unreal. Luca licking his lips. And one more, Guardiola. How many English managers do you think he's lost to in his managerial career?
None.
No, one.
Well,
yeah, we got there. There we go. Absolutely. Just one Englishman has beaten him. So he's up against his nemesis, Roy Hodgson, on Saturday. So, yeah, we'll see. Can that continue, that fine run? And three things to be quickly aware of. Man City.
Then there's also a comment on how many English managers get a chance at the top clubs.
That's true. That is true. Do you want me to whip out that stat you hate about how they do in London?
No, keep your stat in your pants.
Okay. I'll keep that firmly in there, mate. Let's just a quick one on their form. People saying, oh, it's a good time to play Man City. Not the wheels coming off, but if not in the form we normally imagine them to be in, while still away from home, they've won 10 out of their last 11 away matches in the Premier League. The one blemish, that 3-2 defeat at Norwich. So they are human. Interesting one, Aguero. He's played 6 Premier League games at Selhurst Park and never scored, which worries me. Is this finally going to be the day he scores and he's fit and he's past fit? So,
yeah, I mean, I wonder why that is. I'm sure it must be just coincidence, right? Or maybe just doesn't like those port cabins in the corner.
Port cabins, the intimidation, the guy waiting around for him in the tunnel after the game, no longer confined to his small media box.
The guy that stood there in a Palace media T-shirt, just going, "Oh, he's smaller than I thought."
Tweeting it non-stop. And lastly, Kevin De Bruyne, watch out for
De Bruyne.
De Bruyne, sorry, we'll come on to that. Yeah. De Bruyne.
You
want to say
De Bruyne?
You say it that way. I'll say it my way. 8 league assists, and that's twice as many as any player. And now, why are you going on to me about pronunciations?
Because one of our commentators sent me the link that all commentators and broadcasters get, where all the players from every team are sat there pronouncing their own name. So it's De Bruyne. I think with that we can because there's some that you, if you did, everyone would go, what are you doing? The weird one, Benjamin Mendy. Benjamin Mendy.
I don't believe that's correct.
Mendy, honestly.
I'd like to see the video.
Benjamin Mendy.
I think he's having you on. I think he's stitching Chris Grierson up.
Do you know the one that always gets people is the old Portuguese J. So obviously we've got two players now called like J-O-T-A. So we had Hotta at Wolves. And then the other one is, because he's, because the name is Portuguese, it's Jota. So Hotta and Jota. And then you've got Gabriel Jesus. It's Jesus because Brazilian Portuguese, whereas everyone will say Jesus. And everyone used to try and be clever and go Jose Mourinho. It's not. It's Jose Mourinho. Yeah. Does anyone really care?
No. I can see
in your eyes.
As soon as I gave a fake stat, I think we lost everyone there.
I can see in your eyes that I've just bored you. Sorry.
That's the blessing of a podcast, though. No one knows I've switched off there until you pointed that out.
It's pathetic, isn't it? Do I need to go over it?
I think we're done, mate. I think you should wrap it up.
Why can't people just say Bethente Guaita? Bethente quieter. You can say Vicente. It's fine, but it's not Vicente. He's not Italian.
It's David.
It's not Vincente for sure. It's not Vincente. It's either Vicente if you want to anglicise it, or it's Vicente if you want to say what he says. And then it's quieter. It's not Guetta. It's not Guaita. It's not. It's quieter. It's like this wall is whiter than that grey board. But put a G at the start. This wall is whiter than that grey board.
I think, just moving on now, I think it's time...
How many times do I have to say these names before people just say them properly?
Endlessly, mate.
Quite animated this week.
Yeah, there's no more that you can do, Chris. There is no more. You've done it.
People don't want to know.
They don't want to know. They switch off.
No one wants facts in 2019, do they?
No, they just don't want you. They don't want you telling them then.
Okay, fine. 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Oh, it's a long pod today, so I'm going to have to cut you off. Instead of doing a link, can you please introduce what's coming next?
I mean, is it what normally is coming next?
Yeah, of course it is.
Okay, yeah. Well,
you're not at the top of the bill this week.
No.
We've got a strong pod.
We've actually got a... So who's on the pod, firstly? Who's on the pod? Who's beaten
Everyone's already listened to it. Eddie Izzard.
Yeah.
Andrews Townsend.
Yeah, that's true.
And then Joe Denley and Sam Billings.
Oh, I'm having them. It's a football podcast, and they're cricket. I'm having them. Put me above them, at least.
Can't. Already done. It's already done.
Oh, but it's not already done.
Yeah. It's already done. Okay. You're not going above them. Okay. What's next?
All right. What's next is the man, the myth, the legend, the king of Croydon himself, with the pre-match press conference. It's your king, Roy Hodgson.
Hello, Roy. Thanks for your time. Any injury concerns at all, or new injury concerns?
There's a couple of players that we'll assess in the morning, largely due to today's session, but I think they'll probably be okay. The two that are missing are Mamadou Sakho and Connor Wickham, otherwise we're okay.
And with Mam, it's not looking any more likely that he's going to be back soon, or no update on him?
Oh, I hope it's going to be soon. He's been out since February, basically, if we ignore the couple of games that he was able to play for us before breaking down again. So, it's high time, really, that we get him back, and he's working very hard to come back. So I hope it's soon rather than late, but I can't put a time on it.
So the team that's 2 points above you in the table coming to a packed Selhurst Park, they need to be worried, don't they?
I don't know about worried. I don't know that Pep needs to be worried about any team that he faces, but it would be nice if they felt they need to show us some respect. And certainly for us, it's a good day when you have teams like Manchester City with all their quality coming to Selhurst Park, and we know we're going to be stretched to the limit to give them the type of game we'd like to give them. But it's a challenge, and it's an exciting challenge, and all of our players certainly are very much up for that challenge.
2 points behind City, point behind Arsenal, same points as Chelsea, 3 points above Spurs. How proud are you at a quarter of the way through the season with that fact?
Well, it's been a good start, but I mean, like all teams who at the moment are congratulating themselves or basking, if you like, in the glory of having had a good start and got a few points on the board, we're fully aware that that can change very quickly, and the only time we would really be happy to sort of take any credit for it if it lasts until the end of the season. But there's an awful lot of football to be played before that. But you can only do what you can do with the games that are put in front of you. And in the 8 games so far, 14 points is a good haul of points. But we face a tough period of games coming up now. So we're going to be hard stretched, if you like, to keep that level of points going.
Yeah. You spoke about the period coming up. It's like a horror period, really, isn't it? All the top five. But you're sixth. So does that make it less of a concern? Can you go into those games with more confidence?
I think that you can go into the games without really having that sort of feeling of a knife at your throat in terms of the relegation zone, because you do have a little bit of a cushion. No one can take those points away from you. But you're going to get periods like this during the course of the season, and the fact is that you're going to play all of the top teams in the country twice during the course of the season. It's nice sometimes it's spaced out, so there's something in between, but every now and again you get a spell like this one. But it's up to us to produce the level of football that we think we can produce and to keep fighting for every point that's on offer.
It's great then the fans' forums and social media are all positive. Crystal Palace fans obviously a lot to be positive about at the moment. But is there a danger of them maybe getting carried away?
We shouldn't stop that, should you? You shouldn't stop people getting carried. You shouldn't stop them enjoying moments. I think we've got a very loyal fan group who are excellent supporters both home and away. And I think they've followed Palace, most of them, for many years. And, you know, they're used to the ups and downs. But I certainly wouldn't begrudge them at the moment if they're starting to dream and starting to think that, you know, this team can take them even further. But obviously, I think that they understand where we are. They understand, you know, the limitations that we have in terms of our squad and the size of our squad. So as long as I can count on that, then I certainly don't begrudge them the good feeling at the moment and the enjoyment they get, if you like, from being above teams that they're normally way below.
You've spoken there about the squad, and obviously there's still 2.5 months to go before you get the opportunity to see if you can get anything that you think you need. But if you are still doing well, does that make it harder to persuade the money men to splash out?
No, I don't think so, because I think that everyone is on the same page in that respect. I think the owners of the club, with Steve Parish in particular, who I have most dealings with, you know, he's fully aware of where our gaps are and what needs to be done, and that's been the case for a period of time now. So I don't really fear that. It all boils down, I suppose, at the end, when January comes around, is there money to spend? And I'm hoping there will be. And then, of course, even more importantly, can we find the players to spend it on that we think are the right people? Because, you know, we've been quite frugal in that respect, but at least the players we brought in have been of value and luckily haven't cost us lots of money at the moment. And, you know, I am wary of spending other people's money if I'm not certain the person that's being bought is going to prove to be value for money.
Talking about players and contracts, obviously two have been agreed this week, particularly on Christian. It's a difficult answer, I know, but has he deserved a new contract, or is it just a piece of housekeeping because obviously he might be coveted elsewhere and you wouldn't want to lose him for nothing?
Oh, I don't think you allow centre-forwards' contracts to run out, and certainly not centre-forwards like Christian Benteke with his CV, with the quality that he has and with the potential that he has. Obviously, he's been disappointed, like we all have, that he hasn't scored the goals in these last couple of seasons that we, the fans, and in particular himself, don't forget, because he works very hard every day, and it's certainly not for want of trying that the ball hasn't gone into the net for him. So I'm pleased that the club has seen their way to you know, renewing, if you like, their confidence in him, and I fully understand how important that is to the club, because it would be very disappointing to see him find that form for somebody else, and you know, we've allowed him to leave on a free transfer. And of course James Tompkins is another player who's done brilliantly for us. Unluckily he got injured in March, but he's now back to fitness, and I'm very pleased that the club have tied him up for a further couple of years after this season ends, because he has been a very important player, if you like, in the results we've been able to get these last two seasons.
I wonder if I could just ask you a couple wearing hats from previous roles. All the touch lines you've stood on during games, is the biggest rivalry you've ever experienced, the Manchester-Liverpool derby?
Well, Inter Milan was pretty big as well, yeah, you know, right. To be fair. But I suppose after Inter Milan, in terms of European and worldwide prestige, without a shadow of a doubt. But there've been other, you know, rivalries which have surprised me, not least of all ours with Brighton, and certainly not least of all West Bromwich Albion's with Wolves, because they're rivalries and derbies and, you know, fierce derbies that really outside of the area you might not realise exist. But I think Liverpool Man United's right up there with the top derbies in the world.
And taking nothing away from your result against United, has the gloss been taken off the fixture a little bit because of United's current problems?
I wouldn't think so, no, because the fact is the rivalry between those two clubs and their fans goes back much further than season per season. And, you know, for Manchester United, they're always going to want to try and put one over on Liverpool. And vice versa, Liverpool or Manchester United. And I think for fans of those two clubs, it's a massive occasion, always will be, irrespective of where the teams find themselves in the league.
Bulgaria in the week, a lot of people thought that the England lads should have walked off the pitch. What would have been your advice to them had you still been in that role?
I thought that the players, the coaching staff, the people at the FA did everything right. I don't know anything particular would have been gained in them walking off the pitch. I don't think there would have been any more coverage, any more criticism, if you like, of the Bulgarians for the racist abuse the players suffered. I don't know coming off the pitch would have changed that at all. And furthermore, you know, as I've heard many people say and obviously agree with, when people are trying to upset you in that way by racially abusing you, you know, you can't really get a better answer in some ways than to beat them comprehensively like England did. So I don't agree with that it would have been better had they come off. And I don't think there'd have been any more publicity than there's been, or any more praise for England and the way they handled it than there's been. And I can only add my word of praise, if you like, alongside so many others. I thought they were quite brilliant.
Thanks, Roy.
Pleasure.
Excellent. James from Talksport.
Roy, as has been mentioned, you've got a tricky four games leading up to the next international break. Have you got a vision in your head about how many points you're hoping to get out of this period?
It depends what you mean by vision. If you talk about when I go to bed and dream at night, we're going to get 12, but I don't think we will. No, and if you mean by vision, how many points am I calculating? I don't calculate points. It is game per game. And as far as I'm concerned, that's all one can do is prepare as best one can and help the players prepare as best they can for the game ahead of them. And it's no point whatsoever in thinking about what might happen in 2 or 3 weeks' time. It's really a question of bridges and crossing them when you come to them.
Jordan's got 3 goals in the league already this season. Is he the sort of striker, because he's not always been that prolific in the past, but is he someone that you think can maybe score 15 goals a season for this club?
Yes, I'd like to think so. I mean, and I'm pretty certain that he thinks he can, and I'm also certain that Christian Benteke believes he's got a lot more goals to give the club, as does Wilf Zaha. So we're not short of players who can score goals for us, but the fact is, winning games is a balance, and fortunately, we have been able to defend quite solidly, and as a result, we've got our points without having to score many goals so far. But as we proved towards the end of last season, the goals are there. So, just a question of when the faucet is turned on.
We saw Raheem Sterling score 2 more goals against Bulgaria on Monday. You gave him his debut for England. What's most impressed you about how he's furthered his game since you worked with him?
Oh, well, it is the goal scoring, of course. I mean, he was always a fantastic dribbler. He was always a very, very hard worker. Made good runs most of the time as well. In fact, I remember when he played for us in Switzerland in that position in behind the front players, as he was doing for Liverpool at the time, and he was quite outstanding. But the criticism that could be levelled at him then, and often was, much to my displeasure, because I would see him playing well and growing in confidence, only to see that battered by the sort of attention he was getting elsewhere from social media and sometimes the media itself, which was draining his confidence. I think the big things for Raheem is that now there is no drain on his confidence. There is no doubts, and I never had doubts about his ability. You know, that has now been accepted largely by everybody. And of course, he's playing in a team that creates lots of chances. So when he gets into the right areas, he's able to score goals from it. And on his subject too, I must add, I think his maturity as a person has been really fascinating to watch in terms of all the responsibility he's accepted. Not just as a Man City player needing to score goals and play brilliantly every week to keep his place in the team, but also shouldering a very heavy burden, I find, with, you know, the racism and the attention that's being paid quite rightly to this racist problem that we have. I think he's been an absolutely brilliant spokesman, so I can heap praise on him in the hope that he will repay me by playing very badly tomorrow.
Just finally from me, I spoke with Ray Lewington about an hour or so ago, and he said that he he thinks you can keep going as a manager for another 5 to 10 years. Is that something you go along with?
5 to 10 years? He doesn't know how old I am, does he? He thinks I'm younger than I am, I think, Raymond. But I can carry on, there's no doubt about that, if that's the right thing to do. But, of course, I'll have to be convinced when the time comes that it is the right thing to do and it's something which I can really contribute to and something which is going to give me the sort of satisfaction that the last couple of seasons here has done. So I'm just, at the moment, in that situation, quite comfortably waiting to see what transpires. But I'm not prepared to put a date on the day when I'm going to say the football's been great to me and now I'll move aside and let someone else have a go. You know, I suppose you could argue if I've had such a long run, you perhaps should be prepared to move aside and let someone else have a go. But selfishly, I still feel I can do it. I still enjoy it. I still get so much pleasure out of the job that I won't walk away willingly, I don't think.